So I'm going to present the paper, All Your Biases Belong to Us, Breaking RC4 and WPA TKIP on TLS. So first and for all, what is RC4? RC4 is a very simple stream cipher, as you probably already know. It's quite intriguingly small. You can program it in 10 lines of Python. It is used in web on WPA TKIP. It's also, at one point, it was heavily used in SSL on TLS. And it's also used in certain other situations, for example, in certain point-to-point encryption protocols on some other situations as well. So how does RC4 work? Well, we only need to know the very high-level operation. So basically, it's a stream cipher. You give it a key, and it outputs key stream. Encryption is done by XORing the key stream with the plain text, and we get the ciphertext back. So nothing unexpected. So you might be wondering, why are we studying RC4? Isn't this an old algorithm? Well, the reason why we study RC4 these past few years is because it was immune to certain recent attacks on SSL and TLS. And in particular, in the last few years, we had Beast, Lucky13, and also Pool. And these were attacks against the CBC mode of certain block ciphers. And the recommendation at that time to prevent these attacks was to use either an up-to-date TLS library or use a stream cipher. Now, getting up-to-date TLS libraries everywhere proved to be very difficult, so the only option was to use a stream cipher, and the only widely supported one was RC4. So if you look at how much it was used, we can see that around 2013, nearly half of all TLS connections were using RC4. Now, thanks to several attacks, we convinced people to reduce the usage of RC4, and we can see in 2005 it was already at 30%, and currently it's around 2%. Last month it was around 3%. So we can see that all this research paid off. For example, if you look at modern browsers, we see that Chrome and Firefox have already dropped support of RC4. Unfortunately, Microsoft still supports RC4. They were planning to drop it, but certain clients were asking, please still enable RC4. So currently the status is we will update it in some update, but we have no idea when. So Internet Explorer 11 on Edge still support RC4. So that's the update of the work. So what did we do in the paper? We basically did four things. The first thing we did is we looked for new biases in the keystream of RC4. Then we came up with new methods how to use these biases to actually decrypt certain secrets, for example, to decrypt secure cookies. And these methods that we came up with are applied to attack WPA TKIP and also to attack HTTPS. So let's get started with the first part, finding new biases. Now, people already knew that there were biases in RC4. For example, if you look at the keystream distribution at the second byte of RC4, we can see that this is clearly not uniform. For example, value 32 occurs less than uniform, because normally, if this were a secure cipher, we'd see an almost horizontal line here, meaning that it's a uniform distribution. But with RC4, this is clearly not the case. And in particular, one of the most famous biases is here at position 2, that the value 0 occurs twice as often as you would like it to occur. Another example is at byte position 1. We again clearly see this is not a uniform distribution. Again, we want this almost horizontal line, but clearly that's not the case. And in previous works, they showed that all 256 first initial bytes of the keystream have these types of biases. And these types of biases that occur in the beginning of the keystream, we call these short-term biases. As we move on in the keystream, these gradually disappear. However, there are also long-term biases that keep reoccurring throughout the whole keystream of RC4. And there are two important examples. The first one was found by Fluor and McGrew, and they found that certain pairs are essentially occurring more often than uniform. For example, if you have the pair 0,0 or 0,1, they occur more often than you want. The other example is Montan's AB-SAB bias. This is best explained using this graphic. So what this base essentially says is that if you have two keystream bytes A and B, they are likely to reoccur at some point in the future. So you have a small gap here, say from 0 to 100 bytes, and these keystreams are likely to reoccur. So what we did is we wanted to search for new biases. Now, in previous works, or one common approach to do this is to just generate a lot of keystream using random RC4 keys and then just manually inspect the results on graphs. The problem is this is sometimes like finding a needle in the haystack. For example, these Fluor-McGrew biases, we only have 8 out of roughly 65,000 pairs that have a significant bias. So these are very difficult to detect manually. So how do we solve this? Well, we solve this by using a statistical hypothesis test. In particular, we use the chi-square test and the m-test. These are used to detect whether one single byte is uniform or not. On the m-test, it's a lesser-known test, but this test is very good at finding correlations, in particular if there are only a few correlations out of all the total events that you are testing again. Basically, this allowed us to do a very large-scale search for biases in RC4. We found quite a lot of them. I will only discuss a few. For example, we found that even after position 256, there are still quite significant biases in the keystream of RC4. You can see this is clearly not a horizontal line. As we move further along the keystream, these biases gradually weaken, though. So they do slowly fade out. However, we still have these long-term biases. And we also found a new type of these long-term biases. This is explained using this graphic. So imagine you have the RC4 keystream and you cut it into chunks of 256 bytes. What you then have is at position 1 and 3 of every block, these are biased towards the values 0 and 128. So these two values occur more often than you want. So we found a lot of other biases, but I'm not going to bore you with these today. You can always read the paper if you want. So we know that we have these biases in RC4, but are they really bad? What can we do with them? So it was shown in previous works that we can use these biases to recover plain text that is repeatedly transmitted. In particular, let's say we wanted to attack HTTPS and we wanted to decrypt a secure cookie. Let's say that these three bars represent all the HTTPS requests. On somewhere in that HTTPS request, the client or the victim is always sending the same cookie. And we want to decrypt that cookie using biases in RC4. So the idea is that we capture all these encrypted HTTPS requests, and then we basically collect the ciphertext, distribution. What we then do is we guess the value of this cookie. So we take a guess at the plaintext byte, and what we have now is we have a ciphertext distribution, we have a plaintext guess. If we XOR the ciphertext onto plaintext, we get the induced keystream distribution. Now, the nice thing about this is we can compare this induced keystream distribution with the real keystream distribution of RC4. And if our guess was correct, the induced keystream distribution is quite close with the real keystream distribution. So let me explain that with an example, and hopefully that will make things a bit more clear. So let's say you are carrying out the attack and you capture this ciphertext distribution shown in red here. Now the real keystream distribution of RC4 is shown in red. So let's take a guess at the plaintext byte that was encrypted here. For example, 28 in the hexadecimal. Then the induced keystream distribution that we would obtain if we guess this plaintext value is now shown in black here. As you can see, it's not close to the real keystream distribution shown in red. So let's try another byte. Let's say for example, 5C in hex. We can see that the induced keystream distribution, shown in black, matches the real keystream distribution much better. It's still not quite precise. For example, if we pick 5A, we can see that this really matches the real distribution quite well. In other words, this plain text value has the highest likelihood. So what did previous attacks against RC4 do? They simply picked the plain text value with the highest likelihood. We extended this approach by generating a list of candidates for the plain text value and decreasing likelihood. And the reason we did that is because sometimes this most likely plain text value is the wrong one, but candidate 10 or 100 is the correct one. And how will we be able to use this list? Well, let's say we are attacking HTTPS cookies. We could just try all the candidate cookies values. Or if we are trying to decrypt a packet, sometimes these packets have a specific structure. For example, they have a CRC, which we can manually verify ourselves. So how do we generate this list of candidates? Basically, the gist of the algorithm is that we take an iterative approach. We first generate all the candidates of length 1, then length 2, and until we have the desired length. The precise details are not that important to explain the attack. So that's our first main idea, to generate a list of candidates for the plaintext. Our second idea is also to abuse this AB-SAB bias. So how can we abuse this bias? Well, our idea is to assume that there is a known plaintext that is quite close to the secret information that we want to decrypt. So how does this bias work? This bias works that we have certain keystream bytes here, and they are likely to reoccur in the future. So what we can do is we can use this known plaintext, we can use the captured ciphertext to derive the keystream values A and B here. And once we know these values, we can probabilistically predict the values A prime and B prime. And essentially, this allows us to do an ordinary likelihood calculations, like I just explained previously, over this unknown plain text. And the formula you get is this one. So this is also the one you could see in the overview slide. But the main takeaway message here is that if we want to abuse this AB-SAB bias, we have to abuse surrounding known plain text. That's the one thing you have to remember of the slide. Okay, so that was very briefly how we are going to abuse these biases. Now the question is, how can we apply them to break actual protocols? So first we're going to attack WPA TKIP. So WPA TKIP is a protocol used to protect your wireless network. It was proposed as an intermediate solution to the flawed web protocol. So, very brief explanation, how does this protocol work? Let's say you want to send a certain amount of data. The first thing that the sender does, it calculates a message integrity check. Then it adds a CRC. The CRC is basically a leftover from web. It doesn't really serve a purpose. Then we add an initialization vector, and finally we encrypt the frame using RC4. There are two flaws that we abuse in WPA TKIP in order to launch our attack. The first one is that the per packet key that is used to encrypt this packet is constructed in a bad way. So essentially, you have the agreed key between these two stations that are sending data. You have the initialization vector, and from this, a unique per packet key is derived. Now, the problem here is that the designers of the Wi-Fi standard decided to overwrite the first three bytes of this per packet key with values derived from the initialization vector. Now, the idea behind that was to avoid certain attacks that broke web, but in the end, what this means is that we can, as an attacker, predict the first three bytes of the per packet key. And it was shown in previous works that these three values induce unique biases in the keystream, and we will be able to exploit that. So essentially, they tried to avoid an attack against web, but in reality, they made things worse. So that's the first major flaw. The second flaw is that the algorithm that is used to calculate the message integrity check is revertible. So if we manage to decrypt a complete packet, we can simply recover the MIC key. And with this MIC key, we can then inject and decrypt some packets into the network. So our goal is essentially to decrypt a complete packet using RC4 biases. I'm not going to explain how we are going to generate these unique packets. Essentially, what we are doing is we're injecting a lot of packets into the network, and then we are using these RC4 biases to decrypt this WPAT packet. And we can see here, this is the number of ciphertext that we are able to capture. And here we can see the success probability of then recovering this MIC key. And we can see if we capture around 1 million encryptions of a packet, we are able to then derive the MIC key. And how long does this take in practice? Well, we can generate around 2,500 packets per second. Fortunately, I don't have the time to explain how we generate these packets, but the clue is within 1 hour we can attack WPA TKIP, derive the MIC key, and we can use this MIC key to then inject and decrypt some packets into the network. Now, quickly, how did we attack HTTPS? Well, what we did here, the first and for all, in HTTPS on TLS, we have the handshake and record protocol. We ignore the handshake protocol and assume that we already have negotiated our keys. What we then do is we're going to use the FM biases and the ABSAB biases in order to recover plain text. Now, as I mentioned, to use these ABSAB biases, we have to inject known plaintext around the cookie that we are trying to decrypt. So just to recap, we are taking HTTPS, we want to decrypt a secure cookie, and what we have to first do is inject known plaintext around this cookie. How do we do that? Well, we remove unknown cookies from this secure HTTPS request, so we're going to manipulate the requests that the client makes, and we're going to inject known plaintext around the cookie. Essentially, what we want to end up with is that the client, the victim that we are attacking, will send HTTPS requests like this. We have the cookie that we want to decrypt, we have no other unknown cookies around this, we have known headers in front, known cookies after this cookie we want to decrypt. So you may be wondering now, how can we manipulate HTTPS requests of a client? How can we remove cookies that a client is sending? Well, it turns out that this is quite easy to do. Let's say you have a client that normally connects to a site using HTTPS. What we do is we assume we have a man in the middle position, and we redirect this client to a fake subdomain. And when it connects to this fake subdomain, it will use a plain text HTTP connection. And in a plain text HTTP connection, we can actually remove and inject secure cookies. We can't read secure cookies, that would be horrible, but what we can do is remove and inject secure cookies. So how does the attack in the end look? Well, we have our victim here. At one point, it will visit some website over a plain text connection. As an attacker, we will then inject a malicious JavaScript code, and this malicious JavaScript code will generate a lot of requests to, for example, Facebook or to some website you want to attack. The attacker then captures all these encrypted requests. And here it's important that the server uses a keep alive connection so these requests can be made very fast, one after another. Once we have collected a sufficient amount of requests, we use the techniques mentioned previously to generate a list of candidates and to then decrypt the cookie. So what's the success probability of this attack? Essentially, when we capture around 1 billion encryptions of a cookie, we can decrypt it with a very high success rate. So you might be thinking, 1 billion encryptions, that's quite a lot. Yes, you're right. But if we do this, for example, in an internal network, we found out that we can generate around 4,000 requests per second on the attack, which take less than 75 hours to execute. So if you want to see a demo of this, you can visit the website RC4 No More. I don't have time to show it here. So if there are questions, feel free to ask.
Real quickly, so there's been, I mean, most of the ciphers nowadays are block ciphers. Is there any activity on reviving a stream cipher that would actually work?
Yeah, currently there is the Cha-Cha stream cipher of Bernstein. I'm not sure exactly what the current status. I think an RFC is currently in progress for the Cha-Cha stream cipher of Bernstein. So yeah, people are looking at other stream ciphers. Yeah.
So one question that I had, so this more systematic way for searching for biases, I mean, so it would make sense to apply this across a larger set of ciphers. So have you done this? Have other people done this?
So it's an interesting question. I would say that if you're designing a stream cipher or some kind of cipher, it would be very useful to do some of these tests. And then you also have, for example, the NIST suite of statistical tests. So there are certainly a lot of tests you can apply to stream ciphers. Now, personally, I have the feeling that RC4 is a bit special in this case because it really has a lot of these types of biases. So I'm not quite sure how effective this would be against other stream ciphers. So there I would first still do an analytical analysis and then see if it's worth to actually do all these computations because they are time consuming.
Okay, so if there are no further questions, let's thank Martha again.